Well, let's turn to Proverbs 3. Interestingly, providentially, we are going to be talking about some of the things that you shared tonight. It kind of relates to this pop quiz I'd like to give you. A friend of mine sent this to me. It's called Philosophy Lesson. The following is the philosophy of Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts comic strip. You don't have to actually answer the questions. Just read the email straight through and you'll get the point. One, name the five wealthiest people in the world. Two, name the last five Heisman Trophy winners. Three, name the last five winners of Miss America. Four, name 10 people who have won the Nobel or Pulitzer Prize. Five, name the last half dozen Academy Award winners for the best actor and actress. Six, name the last decade's worth of World Series winners. How did you do? The point is this. None of us remember the headliners of yesterday. These are no second-rate achievers. They are the best in their fields, but the applause dies. Awards tarnish. Achievements are forgotten. Accolades and certificates are buried with their owners. Here's another quiz. See how you do on this one. List a few teachers who aided your journey through school. Two, name three friends who have helped you through a difficult time. Three, name five people who taught you something worthwhile. Four, name a few people who have made you feel appreciated and special. Five, think of five people you enjoy spending time with. Easier? The lesson. The people who make a difference in your life are not the ones with the most credentials, the most money, or the most awards. They are the ones that care. We're going to see tonight that, as someone said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Tonight we're going to look at a principle that applies across the board, whether locally or globally, individually or nationally. In fact, we're going to see that it's a principle that runs through the whole creation, starting with what God does, and that is this, that the action of compassion is wisdom's most attractive expression. The action of compassion is wisdom's most attractive expression. And it's the most convincing demonstration that there is of the God of creation. It's a powerful thing. The Good Samaritan's the very picture of it, of true Christianity. Last time we focused on really the promise, the blessing of wisdom that took us from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 to 26. But this time we're going to move on from that to focus on really the condition from the blessing of wisdom to the doing of wisdom, which is verses 27 to 35 of Proverbs 3, where for nine verses Solomon focuses, interestingly, on just doing one thing, on just one of the five things that he tells us about that are so central to wisdom at the very beginning of the chapter. Remember, we saw at the beginning of the chapter that the doing of wisdom boils down to five things, five indispensables of wise living, as we called them, that can bring such blessing. But now at the end of the chapter, the end of chapter 3, what Solomon does is this. He wraps it up by focusing on just one of the five, because it's by far the most important. The first of the five, the first indispensable of wise living, because apparently it's first and foremost. So he starts with it, then lists the other four, and then he spends the last half of the chapter focusing on the first. It's the one that we saw back in 3 and 4, verses 3 and 4 of chapter 3. The one that was about showing true love, where he says, bind kindness and truth around your neck. It's about being faithful and true in meeting the needs of others. Of the five indispensables, this is the one he concludes in our verses for tonight. Why? Well, it's a philosophy lesson that I think is especially fitting for this dark part of the country that we live in the Northeast, and for Woodstock, Vermont, and for the Upper Valley. And that is this. Again, the action of compassion is wisdom's most attractive expression. And it's the most convincing demonstration we're going to see of the God of creation, that He loves them. This is so fundamental to true Christianity that you'll find it all through the Bible and even in the book of Proverbs. Again, Proverbs 3, starting in verse 27. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. And then on the negative side, do not devise harm against your neighbor while he lives securely beside you. Do not contend with a man without cause if he has done you no harm. Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways. For the devious are an abomination to the Lord, and he is intimate with the upright. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. There's blessing in the doing. Though he scoffs at scoffers, yet he gives grace to the afflicted. The wise will inherit honor, but fools display dishonor. Now, we need to first put this in its biblical context, in the context of the verses that come just before it. That make it clear that he's telling us to do with our words and with our works and in our worlds, our spheres of influence, what God does for the world. He wants us to do for the saved and for the lost what he does as we go out in his mercy. Last time we saw that it was all captured in a picture which I brought with me again, and that is the picture of the good earth that God fills with his blessings, letting a sun shine on the righteous and the wicked. Last time we saw verse 19 and 20 that the whole chapter pivots on these two verses. By wisdom the Lord founded the earth, and by his knowledge the deeps were broken up, and the skies drip with dew. By wisdom the Lord founded the earth, and by his knowledge the deeps were broken up, and the skies drip with dew. Now, bear with me a bit, because there's a beautiful picture here of what we're going to be talking about. The skies dripping with dew. It's like it's free and out of nowhere on everyone. Water and dew are symbols of God's blessing. Like it says in Deuteronomy 33, so Israel dwells securely in a land of grain and wine whose heavens drop down dew. Blessed of the Lord is his land with the choice things of heaven, with the dew and from the deep lying beneath, by which he means the springs of the deep, the waters that well up. And that's just what Solomon does here in chapter 3. He says, by wisdom the Lord founded the earth, by his knowledge the deeps were broken up into springs, springs of blessing, and from above the skies drip with dew. That's what God's doing with the world. Kind of as a way of summarizing it in a couple of powerful images. This stands for the provision, really for the compassion that saturates the whole world. Like it says elsewhere in Proverbs, his favor is like the dew on the grass. And he expresses it toward everyone. Or like David said, the earth, O Lord, is full of your mercy. It's literally dripping with it. Or Paul, he did not leave himself without a witness, Acts 14:7, in that he did good and gave you rains from heaven. His goodness saturates it all. That's the meaning of the middle verse in chapter 3 of Proverbs. So much so that we call it the good earth. For by wisdom the Lord founded the earth, and the skies drip with dew. And this image that he uses here at the very middle of the chapter means that through all the wisdom that's behind the creation, God's love shines through the creation. And so God wants us to follow his lead here. Through all the wisdom of our Christian ways, he wants his love to saturate all our ways. Or that wisdom, that truth, will be like a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. He wants his love to saturate our worlds, just like his love saturates his world. Our spheres of influence, like he does. Free and out of nowhere, he wants our spheres of influence, thanks to us, to be dripping with dew. With free blessings on those he brings into our lives, because the action of your compassion is wisdom's most attractive expression and the most convincing demonstration of the God of creation. for the whole world to see. So that's the context of our verse for tonight, our verses for tonight. And they start out again in verse 26. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due. Now, who is good due to? Well, we got to put the New Testament light on this. Paul says that we're to owe nothing to anyone except to love. Remember that? Which means we owe love to everyone. And so Solomon says, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. That is, you owe it when you have the opportunity to do it. There's a lot of things we can't do. It's totally out of our power as you look at all of the stuff going on overseas and people who are hurting. But there's something that is within our power. We owe it love to everyone, and we owe it when it's our opportunity to do it. That's the teaching. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. Which means very simply that if we're truly wise, we will shower the world with love as we seize opportunities to help when in God's providence they come our way. It can happen in both little and big ways through single drops coming down from above or through gushing springs. You know, back when we were in the Twin Cities, I was fishing with one of our kids just north of where we lived, and we ran into four little African-American kids who were fishing too, except they were using a stick and they didn't even have any bait. I noticed they were a little standoffish when I said hi to them, almost a little cold, like people of other races can often are as they've learned to protect themselves from the prejudice that's in us that we don't even know we have sometimes, though they can tell it. And so I thought, how can I soften this ground of their hearts like dew from heaven? What is in my power to do right now? And I found myself saying, hey, you guys want some worms? I know it wasn't much, but boy, did they want some worms. It made their day. Well, Jordan and I went to another spot, and after giving them a few more, and after a while, they walked by us as we were fishing on their way home. And I found myself saying, hey, you know why we gave you those worms? And they said, no. I said, because Jesus told us to. In the Bible, he told us to because he loves you. Do you know Jesus? The oldest girl said, yeah. And I said, what's your name? She said, Tina. Oh, Tina, that's a pretty name. She wasn't cold or distant anymore. She was real now. That shield was down. And I suspect Jesus was a bit more real for her too, because the action of compassion is wisdom's most attractive expression and the most convincing demonstration of the God of creation. Soon they had to go, and I guess it was dinner time. And as she walked off, she said, thanks for the worms. You're welcome, I said. And as we walked off, God was somehow a little more real to me, too. It felt like you could feel the skies dripping with dew. It was truly my Father's world who does not withhold good from the likes of you and me. It's God-like when we do that. It can be so simple, sharing Christ in word and deed, like with dew, small as beautiful. A cup of water in his name, a shirt off your back, maybe even a worm. What does this mean as we unpack it? Well, we often wait for something bigger to give, and we're always preparing to give, and so we never really live. Fred Craddock, who's a minister, put it that way. He said, to give my life for Christ appears glorious. To pour myself out for others, to pay the ultimate price of martyrdom. I'll do it, Lord. I'm ready to go out in a blaze of glory. We think giving our all to the Lord is like taking a $1,000 bill and laying it on the table. Here's my life, Lord, I'm giving it all. But the reality for most of us is that he sends us to the bank and he has us cash in the $1,000 for quarters. We go through life putting out 25 cents here and 50 cents there. We listen to the neighbor's kids' troubles instead of saying, get lost. We give a cup of water to a shaky old man in a nursing home like some of you do. Usually giving our life to Christ isn't glorious. It's done in all those little acts of love, 25 cents at a time. That's God. What's your world like? Are you seizing opportunities to help? Sometimes it gushes out of us like a stream, but more often than not, we're just called to sprinkle them like we did with this baptism a couple weeks ago. It's a beautiful thing. Sprinkle them with grace, with compassion. Are you a convincing demonstration of the God of creation? True wisdom is the ability to convert knowledge into hard change, into currency. Currency that you can spend with your life, practically. And you can save up a little more each day when you invest in that way, and it adds up, and we're storing up rewards in heaven. There's such blessing in the doing. That's what Solomon's saying here. You'll be blessed if you do it. Just like James says, who among you is wise and understanding? James 3:13. Does it all have to do with what we have in the head? No. Let him show if you're truly wise by his good behavior, his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. Like drops of dew. This principle is all through the Scripture. Just like Solomon, our passage for today, James is saying it too. He's saying that true wisdom matures not into cleverness, but into kindness. Someone said, when I was young, I admired clever people. Now that I am old, I admire kind people. That's true wisdom. Because the proof of your wisdom, the proof of the true Christian, the proof of the God of creation, is not in what you think, though of course that's important, but not in what you say, but far more in what you do. It's like Christ said, wisdom is vindicated by her deeds. Matthew 11:19. Real wisdom is not a matter of spontaneous wit, of being sharp enough, you know, to know exactly what to say. Rather, it's a matter of spontaneous works. That's the teaching here. Of being alert and wise enough to know what to do. The true Christian, the Christian right can demonstrate a whole lot of heat, I'm afraid, but what about love? We think we know what's right, what's truly wise, forgetting that without love, in the gentleness of wisdom, like James says, we can be dead wrong, no matter how right we may be. And we can be that way too with those that we love most. No matter how right we may be in what we say, we can be dead wrong in the way we say it, and it's from the pit of hell. True wisdom is a sharp mind directing a soft heart. And so Solomon wraps up this chapter by converting wisdom into hard change that a soft heart can turn into dew that comes down free and out of nowhere. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. A lot there. But moving on, do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. We don't have to go looking for this. It's like the neighbor knocking on our door. It brings the element of providence into it now. The image of a neighbor knocking and needing something. This is our Father's world, and so often these opportunities just providentially present themselves, like when you're fishing and there's some African American little girls. We just need eyes to see and ears to hear and ready hands and feet when our neighbor comes. Sharp minds acting through soft hearts. True wisdom. Not just quick wits, but quick works. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. It's like the saying goes, and I love this, he gives twice who gives quickly. who doesn't begrudge it and put him off. He gives twice who gives quickly when there's the opportunity. That's the idea in this verse. What does that look like? Well, as we flesh this out in the real world, Ron Ritchie was one of the pastors at a church that's really impacted me over the years, Peninsula Bible Church, where Ray Steadman was the senior pastor. And he and his wife were having a special meal out at a local French restaurant for their anniversary, a candlelight meal just for the two of them. And all of a sudden they were talking, and you know how something's going on, you don't notice for a while, but then you turn and see what it was. And he sees this busboy going back and forth, and his shoes are flopping because the soles are falling apart. And that's what he's been hearing for quite some time. And he's a Cambodian immigrant. And Ron finally stops him and talks to him and looks at his shoes and said, "You need some new shoes. How about if we meet at the shoe store?" And he found out when he got off work. And so they made arrangements and they met up at this shoe store. And he showed up and he looked at Ron like he wasn't really sure he could trust him. Just like those little African-American girls. He looked at him like, "What do you want out of me? You know? There's something you got to get through here." And they went inside and they found some really nice shoes and put them on. And Ron helped take off his old shoes and put on the new ones, various ones, until they found the ones that fit. And they went to the cash register. And as Ron was paying, he turned once he was done and he saw the man standing there silently like a statue, just looking at him. And he was more like cradling the box of shoes in his arms, staring at Ron through his tears. And as Ron turned to pay, he said, "I thought, I can't imagine a place in this world I would rather be right now. I can't imagine a place in the whole world I'd rather be than right here." I'm telling you, that man's heart was drenched with dew, sprinkled, baptized with grace. And so was Ron's, because there's blessing in the doing. Thanks to the action of his compassion, which is the most convincing demonstration of the God of creation. Now, the flip side of it is this, moving on briefly to verse 29. Of Proverbs 3. He goes on to talk about the negative. "Do not devise harm against your neighbor while he lives secretly beside you. Do not contend with a man without cause if he has done you no harm. Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways." These are two sides of the same coin. The coin that we're looking at tonight, the currency called loving your neighbor as yourself. It's got mercy on one side, which we've been talking about, and then justice on the other side. Just like it says in Micah, "He has told you, O man, what to do, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love mercy." Mercy means seizing opportunities to help, okay, as we've seen. And justice means spurning opportunities to hurt, which we need to work on just as much. But I see that my time is up. 7 o'clock, so maybe we'll continue that discussion next week.